The MA-649 calling Calflax Car 6.
Calflax Car 6, come on in.
Say, Johnny, that the ditch is broke on the northwest corner of Section 22.
You are listening to a foreman calling his ranch hands by shortwave radio in the San Joaquin Valley of California, where the people act. The People Act. These are true stories, tape recorded in communities across the nation where people are working together to build a better future. The People Act is presented by the TV Radio Workshop established by the Ford Foundation and produced by the CBS Radio Network. Every voice and sound is real. No actors are used. Now, here again is your narrator, the noted reporter, Robert Trout. You go to California, to the San Joaquin Valley, to get a story about migrant workers. And on your first day, you find it in a jalopy on a dirt side road. Only it isn't what you expected. You find a baby locked in a car, alone, hot, covered with flies, crying. You look for the parents, but they're not around. They're somewhere out in the fields, picking cotton. You're angry as you drive away. You look out across the hot, flat valley, the fields white with blooming cotton, and you ask, what kind of people live here? Why does something like this happen? You decide to find out. You begin at a camp where 300 migrants live from Mexico, Arkansas, Oklahoma, and points east and south. You see rows of one-room shacks, two or three broken-down cars, half a dozen men sitting in the sun dozing, a small group singing. You walk down a dirt lane between two lines of shacks, knock on a rickety wooden door, go inside into a bare, oppressive room. You see a faded woman in a faded dress, five ragged kids, a sleepy dog. Your guide, a social worker, asks the questions.
Hello, Ms. Triplett.
Hello.
How are you today?
Oh, pretty good.
I wondered how the children were.
Oh, they're doing pretty good.
Well, that's good. Where is Mr. Triplett working?
He isn't working right now.
When he is working, does he work for the ranch owners here?
Well, wherever he can find a job in cotton, working whatever he can find, irrigating, things like that.
How many children do you have?
Five.
Have they all been well?
No, they've been sick quite a bit.
What does the children have for breakfast?
I hardly ever have anything much. Bread once in a while. Get bread, meat once in a while. Bread and gravy mostly.
You stand in the dusty lane, listen to the song. You know that in another month, the cabins will be empty. The people will be starting the great migrant circle, picking the apples in Washington, the walnuts in Oregon, the grapes and the oranges. You go to the ranchers, but they don't want to talk to you. You find out why from Martin Gunderson, the school superintendent.
I've read many articles on the cotton pickers and the ranchers. In my experience, I don't think there's been an honest article written yet, because people will come in here and stay for two or three days and go back as experts to write an article. I think that you have to live with these people for a considerable period of time before you actually understand the problem of the cotton picker and the problem of the rancher.
You're a reporter. You have a job to do. You tell Gunderson that. You don't intend to smear anybody. You just want the facts. You finally convince Gunderson and the ranchers. Ed Anderson, the manager of Tom O'Neill's Calflax Ranch, takes you sightseeing in his Jeep.
Well, Bob, this is what is known as the west side of Fresno County. Now, Fresno County is about the size of the state of Massachusetts. You know, Bob, the amazing thing about this area is that about 10 years ago, there wasn't anything out here except sagebrush and jackrabbits and horned toads. And, of course, today the Agricultural Commissioner of Fresno County released the figure that Fresno County would probably be the first in the nation in agricultural value produced during the 1951 season. And I believe it was in the neighborhood of $350 million.
You look out over the rich valley again, the flat cotton fields, the 2,000-foot deep wells, bringing up water to irrigate the land that was desert 10 years ago.
KMA 649 calling CalFlex car 6.
CalFlex car 6, come on in.
Say, Johnny, the ditch is broke on the northwest corner of section 22.
You see ranches so big that the hands ride jeeps, talk to each other by radio, plant from planes. You watch a huge cotton picker thrash across a field, doing the work of 40 men. And as the machine lumbers past like some prehistoric monster, you feel it belongs here in this vastness. You feel dwarfed, lost, and you wonder, is there a place for people anywhere in this immense valley? At another migrant camp, you listen to the songs of the Arkies and the Okies. You hear stories of bitterness and anger about the rancher who charged 75 cents for 5 gallons of drinking water, about the migrants who tore apart a model camp that a rancher built for them. You look at the people who live in the one-room shacks, pick the cotton, move with the crops. You ask about them, and what Martin Gunderson tells you surprises you.
We often think that of cotton-picking people as being a class by themselves and rather a lowly class. This isn't true. They consider that a specialized business, and it is. When a person can go out and pick 700, 800, or 900 pounds of cotton a day at $3 a hundred, they make a very nice daily wage.
Martin Gunderson is a teacher. You ask about the migrant kids who go to his school.
We don't know from one day to the next, within 50 to 100 pupils, how many we're going to have. Every day is an enrollment day. The biggest jump we ever had was 153 pupils in one day. It was strange that on that Monday morning we enrolled 153 pupils, but our actual attendance increased only 3, in that 150 had left over the weekend.
You've seen the valley. You've met some of the people who live in it. You sit down and try to put together some conclusions, and the only thing you come up with is a feeling of isolation, people being dwarfed by nature and out of contact with each other. You see the vast distances of the valley as an enemy that overwhelms the people, separates them, keeps them from each other, and you don't see how anyone can change things. The cry of a baby in the vastness of the valley is about the smallest sound you can hear, and the last thing you'd expect to have any effect on the area. But 2 years ago, at the height of the cotton-picking season, some babies got sick. Some of them died. Fresno radio station KFRE told the story.
This is Charles Broadhurst with the latest news from the KFRE newsroom. 2 Fresno County officials, Chairman M.S. Meeker of the Board of Supervisors and Dr. Walter A. Rolfing, the director of the General Hospital, blame distance and delay as the major problems in coping with the annual infant diarrhea and malnutrition epidemics among children of migrant workers on the west side. Dr. Rolfing asserted 407 cases of infant diarrhea, gastroenteritis, enteritis, dysentery, malnutrition, and dehydration were admitted to the hospital in 1949, and 15 of the children died less than 24 hours after admission.
Not a news story. It had been going on for years, the kind of thing nobody notices in a big town. But it was picked up by outsiders, enlarged, distorted, and before long it made headlines about the valley from coast to coast. Investigators and reporters poured in, wrote about disease, dirt, poverty. The people of the valley knew they weren't as bad as the outsiders said, but they found they didn't really know how bad or how good they were. They began to look around, try to find out.
One of the ranchers asked the health officer to take him into the wards of the Fresno General Hospital so that he might see some of these babies, and he was terribly affected. The health officer said that he left the hospital with tears rolling down his cheek.
The ranchers, health officials, welfare workers met at the public health office in Fresno to talk about what they could do. Dr. William Stein, the county health officer, presided.
Don Jensen, you represent the Fresno County Public Welfare Department, and I'm sure that we all would be glad to hear from you.
The welfare department has a terrific problem this year because we anticipate now that our caseload in welfare will go up 10 times during the next 2 or 3 months period. and we just can't handle it without general community support from the growers and from these other agencies.
Dr. Rolfing, you're the director of the Fresno County Hospital.
If we could provide early, simple, quick care, I'm sure that many people, many of our patients, wouldn't end up in the hospital with a lot of heartache, a lot of sickness for themselves, and really a lot of expense to the county taxpayers.
This is Patty Randall. You live on the west side. We'd like to have you discuss the problem from your angle.
Well, Doctor, I think that most of the growers, most of the people who do live on the west side have known for a long time that there were lots of problems, but haven't quite known how to solve them or what to do about them. I'm sure that during this coming spring that the farmers, if it is suggested to them, would be more than willing to supply free lunches at the schools on the west side Huron area.
Ms. Thielman, you represent the Fresno County Coordinating Council. I'm sure that you can add something to our organization, Ms. Thielman.
Well, as a layperson particularly interested in this project, it seems to me that all the agencies have some very fine plans, but the thing that we need above all else is some sort of coordinated project in which we all work together.
For the first time, all agencies of the valley concerned with the migrants were meeting together, planning together. A permanent council was formed. A grant was received from the Rosenberg Foundation to help start clinics. Ranchers donated buildings. County Public Health Nurse Director Winifred Erskine begins to tell you how they went about setting up the joint committees.
We went into the camp to find a public health committee. We first attempted to find the woman who was best liked in the camp, and usually that's fairly easy to discover. We explained to her what our plan was and asked her to get 15 or 20 other women in the camp that she could work with and that she would like to work with and meet at a future date when the public health nurse would explain the services of the county health department and some of the other health resources of the county. We found at this time that the women in the community, in the camps, labor camps, did not know each other. They had not developed any community action or any community response or taken any community responsibility. This gave them the opportunity to make friends and to do something for other people, and they seemed to like that and enjoy it very much.
You begin to feel what it means to have ranchers and migrants working together, getting clinics, knocking on doors, bringing people in to get immunization shots. You want to see for yourself what they've accomplished, so you hitch a ride to the Huron Clinic with Nurse Dorothy Piper. The clinic isn't anything special to look at. A wooden building, inside, clean whitewashed rooms. You sit down and listen in on an interview between the doctor and an expectant mother.
Hello, Miss Crum. How are you feeling this afternoon?
Oh, I have a little headache. It's about
a little headache. Well, how long have you been having your headache?
Oh, just today is all, more or less.
And have you been staying on your diet?
Well, not exactly like I ought to be.
Oh, what seems to be our trouble?
It's kind of hard to get food kind of manage, I guess, to, you know, just kind of get along with.
But other than staying on your diet and your little headache, you've been feeling very well.
I've been feeling good.
Mm-hmm. Has the baby been quite active?
Well, not yet. No.
Not yet. You haven't had any other complaints other than your headache? No swelling of your feet or anything of that sort?
No.
Well, that's fine then.
And suddenly it hits you. In this room, this ordinary scene is something special. The doctor comes from 50 miles away. The patient comes out of a migrant camp. Against a background of vast distances and migratory people, you see that this represents progress. You begin to listen hard.
How are you feeling tonight, Alicia?
Oh, fine.
Good. Have you seen the doctor yet?
Yes, I have.
Did you get some pills to take?
Yes, ma'am.
Do you know why you're going to take them?
No, I don't. Will you please explain it to me?
Well, when you're going to have a baby, one of the things that we want you to have is a good blood supply. And part of that has to come from the things that we eat, as well as from the pills that we give you. So the little green ones are the iron pills. Do you make tortillas, Alicia?
Yes, I make tortillas.
What do you make them from?
Flour.
What kind of flour?
White flour.
Suppose you could make corn tortillas for a change?
Well, I don't know. I haven't tried it.
Haven't? Well, good. We'll have a cooking experiment for you then.
You find that the clinic has reached out in all directions. It started taking care of the sick, then prenatal cases. Then the committees began to poke into the causes of sickness and found that a main cause was bad diet, lack of food, the wrong food. Martin Gunderson tells you something that happened in his school cafeteria.
Many of the things that are served in the cafeteria are foreign to some of the youngsters. I remember the first time we served turkey in the cafeteria. Many of the youngsters didn't know the difference between the turkey and the dressing and wondered just exactly what was being served. Salads for some of the youngsters are rather strange, and we have to teach them to eat salads.
You hear how the committees went to the University of California Agricultural Extension Service and got the home demonstration agents to come out and hold classes. You sit in on one of them.
Now then, are there any other questions that anybody would like to ask about any of these breads? Angie, how did you make that little braid that we had?
I sliced the little pieces, and then after we finished slicing them, well, I placed them over the top, sort of in a braid-like, mm-hmm. and then we just doubled the end up.
Under?
We put it under, and then we just put it in the oven.
Well, I was going to say something. We're having the best opportunity that very, very few women will get to have, to learn things that we don't know, and they'll help us in the long run for our children and for our neighbors.
You take out your notebook, and you try to decide how to put down what a class like this means. And then you overhear a conversation between a nurse and a migrant woman that saves you the trouble.
Well, this is a baby, huh? He looks better, doesn't he?
I think he does.
Do you feel that taking him to the well baby clinic down here at Huron has helped you in feeding and taking care of him?
Yes, I do.
What are you feeding him now, Mrs. Brown?
Well, the vegetables and the liver and bacon and his milk and cereals.
Are you giving him vitamins?
Yes.
And orange juice every day?
Most every day.
Didn't you tell me at clinic last time that he had gained 4 pounds since the time before?
Yes.
That's pretty good. He looks lots better.
You've been listening to doctors, dietitians, social workers all day. You're impressed. But nobody's answered the question that got you started on this, the one about the baby locked in the car. Edith's story comes the closest. She takes you out of the clinic into another building, into a cheerful room full of singing kids. This is the Child Care Center, a place where the kids can stay when their parents go into the fields to work.
Dickory dock, the mouse ran up the clock. The clock struck one. The mouse ran down.
As you watch the kids, you realize something. While they are here, these kids aren't rootless, aren't migrants. They have a home. You've got part of the answer you're looking for. But as long as migrants follow the crops, move from place to place, lack a permanent home, how much can actually be accomplished? You stop in at Frank Coit's ranch because everybody you've met has told you to go and see what he's doing. Foreman Ed Perinoni takes you into a one-story brick building. You look down the production line of Frank Coit's electric fishing reel factory.
This is our assembly line over here. We make the final assembly. We put our reels together there. There's 16 girls in that operation. The girl that was operating the hoist press there is a full-time operator with us. We trained her ourselves here. As a matter of fact, none of the people here had any previous factory experience. We've done the training all on our own. Well, this could develop into something very big. We're talking about 10,000 reels now, but as soon as materials are available, we may be running 100,000 reels a year.
You stand there and look at a gamble, a factory to give migrant workers jobs in the off-season, to give them a permanent place to live. Some old-timers shake their heads and call it crazy. Others say Frank Coit has an answer to the valley's big problems. Frank Coit is betting on it.
To get good men, as I say, we have to have interesting work and year-round work. So that's the primary object of this deal here, is to try to create year-round jobs. The new housing project is to build better houses so we can employ better labor. So that every convenience will be out here that they have in the city.
You feel that you are in on the beginning of something. You see migrant workers finding permanent homes after years of wandering from the Dust Bowl to this dusty valley to permanent jobs. You're at the Cal Flax Ranch when they celebrate the first anniversary of the health center. The high school band is there, 20 strong. They even have some permanent members this year, and everybody's proud of them. You hear Dr. Neil Daw, representing the State Medical Association.
We are very happy to report that our county health officer and his associates have done a wonderful job in cleaning up Fresno County and the San Joaquin Valley. And we are very happy to report today that the health conditions in this particular area are better than they are in most parts of the state.
You listen to Nurse Director Winifred Erskine talk about the future.
This is a dream, you know. But we might as well dream, because without dreams we never get reality, I guess. But I hope that we will have a day nursery where the little babies, the little infants up to 2 years, can be taken care of during the day while the mother is out in the fields, or if she's working. But then we have other dreams, too. We dreaming that someday we may be able to have some sort of industry here that we could work in between the crops.
A little while ago, you might have called it a strange speech, mixing up babies and jobs. But now you know how closely the two go together. And you know that here in the vast San Joaquin Valley, they're licking the problem of health. They're starting to build communities, to sink roots, to make permanent homes for people. You hear the Reverend Harold Baker say it.
One of the very, very important things as far as this particular area is concerned is drawing the people together, and the ranch owners and the foremen and the laborers, getting them together, working together in the community for the betterment of the community. And I feel that it is going to be a wonderful thing, do a wonderful job. That's going to take years, of course. But we will eventually have, perhaps not the largest, but one of the best communities that you'll find anywhere.
You have just heard The People Act, narrated by Robert Trout, a documentary series presented by the TV Radio Workshop established by the Ford Foundation and produced by the CBS Radio Network. These programs are under the sponsorship of the National Committee for The People Act. Here is the committee's director, Elmore McKee.
The people of the San Joaquin Valley, California, have faced well a responsibility that is too often neglected. Do you wish to study the needs of the migrant citizens of your area, and with them to take some kind of community action? If so, won't you write us at the People Act Center, State College, Pennsylvania? Dr. Milton S. Eisenhower and his associates there will try to put you in touch with someone in your area qualified to consult with you. And if you would like a script or a record of today's program, please write us at the People Act Center, State College, Pennsylvania.
The People Act is produced by Irving Gitlin, edited by Fred Free. Tape recordings for this program were made in the San Joaquin Valley of California by field reporters Dave Moore and Louis Spence. Original music by Norman Lockwood, conducted by Alfredo Antonini. Join us again next week when the people act in Carroll County, Georgia.